Blog Talk Radio.
Another Just a Freedom Radio Show. The date is May 5th, the year 2011. I'm your host, Jamal Brown, and you are tuned in to another exciting show. First and foremost, before I move any further, I have to let everyone know that this weekend, May 8th, there will be an encore presentation of Harriet Returns, a dramatic play that highlights the public and private lives of Harriet Tubman. The show will be taking place at the Belmont Mansion. For more information, you can check out www.belmontmansion.org, Belmont, B-E-L-M-O-N-T, Mansion, M-A-N-S-I-O-N.org. That play will be taking place there at the Belmont Mansion in Philadelphia this Sunday, 1 p.m., Eastern Time. As I mentioned, we have a dynamic guest on the line with us this evening. That guest is none other than Michael Webb. Michael Webb is the director of the International Youth Leadership Institute of Harlem, IYLIH. This organization takes fantastic young individuals on a trip around the world, literally, not just in their minds, but young people who have earned their way by various means get an opportunity to travel the world, visit places in Africa, and learn more about themselves and about our planet. Mr. Webb, are you on the line with us?
I am. Hi, good evening. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Certainly, certainly. Thanks for being here. Let's just jump right into it. First, I always like to find out more about our guests. Mr. Webb, tell us, who is Michael Webb?
Well, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, but I consider myself a New Yorker, and I've been in New York for the last 30 years, went to Columbia University, and actually started IYLI while I was working on my doctorate at Columbia, and was working in the International Education Department and a graduate student, and saw the need to really expose our young people to global issues. A lot of our students hadn't been south of 116th Street.
Oh, man.
And this is a problem that we have, isolation. And we all know that experience is the best teacher.
Certainly.
And when your experiences are limited, then your worldview is going to be limited as well.
Certainly, certainly. Certainly. Now, was there traveling in your past growing up? Had you gotten out and seen the world? What sort of got you prompted in giving the children a better and larger worldview?
Well, it's interesting because I never, of course, traveled outside the country, but as I was growing up, I lived in a single-family home. My mom was our sole supporter. And, you know, because of economic situations and personal situations, we were always on the train traveling between cities. Our home base was Buffalo, but we traveled, lived in Detroit, lived in Cleveland. So my earliest memories were sitting on a train, looking out the window, watching this world whiz by. Mm-hmm. And it must have done something to me, because when I became older, I've got the travel bug. And I really, since I've been an adult, I've traveled to almost 50 countries, traveled all around Africa, but Europe and South America and the Caribbean as well. So I really realized the value of travel.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Give us a shout out. Just a few of the shout out a few of the stamps in your passport.
Oh my goodness. Well, Brazil, Venezuela, Trinidad Tobago, Puerto Rico, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Saint Eustatius, Saint Martin.
Okay.
Islands, Africa, North. I lived in Egypt for four years. Worked at the American University Cairo.
Wow.
I also taught at Gumel Advanced Teachers College in Nigeria.
Okay, I have two questions. Sorry to cut you off. I got two questions before we move on to the main focus, which is the youth. I want to know which place has the bluest water, and which place do you count as your favorite place?
Well, you know, I love the Caribbean, and Puerto Rico is a beautiful country. You know, it's a commonwealth, but, you know, to me it's a country, and
mm-hmm.
we live there. Beautiful rolling hills, beautiful people. Reflecting the African diaspora. You know, you find it from the darkest hues to blonde hair, blue eye,
mm-hmm.
in between. And in the African culture and music and in the food and the language, you know, it's just so strong there. And many of the Puerto Rican people aren't really aware of their culture. They just live it.
Mm-hmm.
As somebody who is an Africanist, you know, I just see so much of Africa there, and it's close. It's warm,
yeah.
And it's close.
Got it. So I had two qualifications there: the bluest water, and then the number one place. Which category does Puerto Rico fit in?
Puerto Rico is the bluest water. I think the number one place is Nubia. I've had a chance to live among the Nubian people of Egypt, of what's called Upper Egypt, since
mm-hmm.
the south actually. And the people are some of the kindest people that you meet anywhere in this world.
That's
you
right.
You never really hear about them because they mind their own business, but anybody who goes there is a welcome guest. Welcome with
certainly.
Open arms.
I can attest to that wholeheartedly. In the year 2005, I had the fantastic opportunity to visit Egypt with Ashra Kwasi in his Kemet Nu Know Thyself tours. I was there for 15 days.
Oh, yes.
And on that trip, there's over 700 miles of travel. We all the way started in Cairo all the way down to Aswan and Abu Simbel. And
wow.
I can attest that I went to this Nubian again, it was Aswan. I went to this Nubian island in the middle of the Nile, and first time there, and you know, befriended a brother. His name, ironically, was Jamal as well, and I offered to welcome me onto his roof at 2 o'clock in the morning to drink tea. So that's a story
wow.
I will have with me my entire life. First time ever meeting this brother. First time ever in that part of the world. Again, it was a Nubian brother, dark as me. I'm a dark skinned brother, darker than me. Sipping some tea, talking world politics on his roof at 2 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, certainly some beautiful, some beautiful people, some beautiful land, and just a beautiful, beautiful situation. Everything about Nubia truly is fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. The sons and daughters of pharaohs.
That's right. That's right. Let's switch reels a little bit here and talk about these youth that you are inspiring, uplifting, educating, and all that good stuff. Who are these youth? How are they into the program, and how do they get a chance to see the world?
Well, actually, these young people inspire me. These young people are so motivated and so interested that they get up on Saturday morning and they travel from all over the city to Columbia University, where they participate in seminars on different global issues and how they affect the community. I think the beautiful thing about it is that these young people feel a connection to the world. They definitely see themselves as citizens of the world, not just Harlem or the South Bronx or Staten Island. Our program is open. We don't have any kind of requirement other than interest. So if you come to three seminars, you go through an interview with a parent, a student, and a volunteer, you're in. And you're
wow.
a fellow. We have an expression, IYLI for life.
Okay.
So it doesn't take much to get in, but, you know, once you're in, a lot's expected of you. Like, you're expected to be an active member and serve your community. You're expected to exemplify through your actions the kinds of ideals and beliefs that the organization stands for. And you're expected to be very proactive in terms of your own personal development. You are going to college. That's
okay.
not negotiable. And so the only question is, where are you going to college?
Okay. Awesome, awesome. Give us a profile of the typical student, if there is one, that is in the program.
Well, there's no typical profile. You have students in the program who have had a really rough time academically and don't really have very strong academic skills. You know, our data show us that when students are in the program for 3 or 4 years, they actually do much better. We have a 99% graduation rate. But then we've got students who are academic superstars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're Gates Millennia Scholars. They're young people who get scholarships to some of the most prestigious colleges in the country and everything in between. Because we're not looking for necessarily their developed talent at this point. We're looking to develop the talent. That's the whole idea of IYLI, developing new talent, not just identifying the talent that already has been coming to some kind of fulfillment.
Got it, got it. What's the age bracket?
These are all high school students. They range in age from 13 years old to 18 years old. We've had a couple of 19-year-old students who have spent an extra year in high school, but they're typically 13, 14, 15, 16. Students usually get into IYLI when they're in 9th or 10th grade, and many of them stay for 4 years until they graduate.
Okay. Tell us some of the community service projects that some of the students have been a part of.
Well, right now we have one young man who's from East Ireland, and we had a very difficult time finding a placement for him because just couldn't find anything that he liked. Everywhere he went, he doesn't feel any connection. So until he met this organization that we set up for him called Movement for Justice in El Barrio, and this is an organization that fights gentrification in East Harlem. He lives in a building that's being gentrified. So he identified personally with the
immediately.
Immediately.
It's affected him where he lived, literally.
Exactly. It's real for him. He goes door-to-door in housing complexes, informing residents of their rights, helping to organize residents. And here's a young man who's 16 years old who was very shy. Really, when he first came to the program, he didn't say a word. Sat in the back, very quiet. But now he's begun to realize his power. And through experience, he's had success. And success breeds confidence.
Certainly.
So he's becoming much more confident. We've got young people who are doing work with youth development organizations, after-school programs, working with elected officials, artists. We've had students who have done campaigns down in Times Square to stop the violence. We had several young people who did a video with EDC on what you do when you're stopped by the police.
Wow.
Many of our young people get in trouble because they just don't know how to behave when they're stopped by law enforcement.
Certainly. So talking too much, being too fidgety,
There you go. That's it. So they did a video because they wanted to educate young people in their own language about what to do if they're stopped. A variety of projects like that. I mean, the projects are just as diverse as the students, and they exemplify the students' sense of justice, their sense of change that they want to see, and their personal interests.
Tell us some success stories. I know that there's always, in these type of situations, always those nuggets, those stories that, you know, don't necessarily make the brochure, but just things that sort of, some stories that sort of stood out to you, again, some success stories that some individuals have, you know, perhaps overcome something.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many. And I could think about two young men. I won't mention their names. They lived in Harlem. These are young men who had a very troubled past. They were cousins. And they went to high school in Harlem, and you know our schools in Harlem are not the best, unfortunately. We should have world-class schools, but don't for the most part, although there's some good exceptions. And they were doing very poorly. They weren't going to school, very turned off. And so once they became involved in IYLI, they started associating with other young people who were positive. And somehow, I think it was a miracle that these two young men graduated on time at 18 years old. They had about 11 credits, and they were 17 years old. They busted their butts, went to school in the summer, and they ended up, through credit recovery, graduating. And for me, that was one of the biggest blessings. It's just seeing that they could have turned left, but they went right. You know, they could have ended up being, you know, in situations that were very bad, but they went on to college, and, you know, they're trying to make something of themselves representing. You know, for me, that's one of the most important accomplishments in my 40 years working in education, is to see young people have successes like that.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
We've got some of the typical stories, you know, of young people getting scholarships and, you know, coming from a very poor family and them going to Harvard or going to Stanford or some other school. You know, many stories like that. I mean, when you work with young people, there's just a million stories.
Right.
It's really difficult to pick one because each one of them is poignant. Each one of them is really important.
And made an impact in that person's life and their family and, you know, their community in some capacity.
Absolutely. It's a blessing for me, an impact on me.
Beautiful, beautiful. Tell us about the travels. Where are some of the places that you and the young people have traveled together?
Well, the whole idea is for them to experience the African diaspora. In fact, we have a benefit coming up on May 19th, and we're honoring Marta Moreno-Vega. And she's somebody who stands for the diaspora. She's been a champion of joining people of the African diaspora for years, founded the African Caribbean Cultural Center. The point of these trips is really threefold. One is for them to see that the images of Africa and Latin America that are portrayed are wrong, that people have the same ambitions, aspirations, work hard, you know, want to send their kids to school, the same things that we want here. The second one is for young people to see that people everywhere have a common bond, and particularly in the African diaspora, that the cultures that you see in the United States, you know, you see them in Africa. In fact, many of those cultural elements came from Africa. And so that, you know, there's something really powerful about being part of the African diaspora. But we also want them to step outside themselves. You know, when you're in a new country and they speak a different language and you're trying to learn the language and you're trying to adjust to customs, you have to face some things about yourself, your insecurities. You have to face the fears. You have to stand up and be a different person and step outside yourself. And that's a liberating experience, and that's what the travel experience does for young people. It liberates them. It takes them above themselves. It shows them that they're more than what they thought they were, and that they belong to something bigger than they knew they belonged to.
Amazing, amazing. I love it. I love it. What are the reactions? What are, I know you can, I wish you could sort of capture, you know, that face, you know, the face of that young person when they step off the plane, like I said, hear that different language being spoken, see the hustle and bustle, again, downtown Cairo. I tell everyone, you haven't seen hustle until you've seen Cairo. So, yeah, just sort of, if you could, just sort of tell a story of a young person and then a reaction, being on the African continent for the first time, seeing the sights, smelling the smells, hearing the sounds. Just, again, if you could, just give us a quick glimpse of, a story or two that sticks out in your mind.
It's overwhelming. And, you know, on the one hand, even despite our best efforts to tell young people about what they're going to encounter, there's no substitution for the experience.
Actual being there, right.
That plane, and they get there, and they see all these tall buildings, and they see this incredible traffic, and they see people everywhere. You know, it's just overwhelming to them. You know, first they had stereotypes. They didn't even know that the cities look very much like cities here.
Look just like downtown, whatever, USA, right.
Exactly. So, you know, the sheer amazement at seeing something that was so familiar but yet so foreign, you know, that's incredible. Trying to cross Tahrir Square, because you've been in Egypt, in Cairo, mm-hmm. Tahrir Square is one of the most crowded,
hectic
places on the earth.
Certainly.
And so just trying to walk across that square, as a New Yorker, you learn how to jaywalk.
Okay.
But your skills are really tested once you get over there.
It's almost like that game Frogger, you know, a couple steps forward, a couple steps back, watching your left, right peripherals.
That is so true. And then, you know, you find young people who feel a sense of being at home, especially as they in Egypt when they start traveling further south.
Mm-hmm. It gets darker and darker.
Darker and darker.
That's right.
Exactly. Feeling like, you know, I'm in Africa. These are my people. I belong here. And just, you know, an incredible feeling of a sense of belonging. And to see them, like, meet people and be so warm toward them, be accepted by those people and accept those people in their own turn.
Mm-hmm.
To see that kind of interaction. I mean, that's indicative of what the students experience when they go over. Then he has some other things, you know, some culture shock things, too. Like, you know, we were living in villages in many countries where we go. We spend 2 weeks in the village.
Okay.
We don't want them to see the city. We want them to experience everyday life.
Okay.
So that first day when they ask that question, where's the restroom?
Where's the restroom?
Everybody says the restroom's back behind over here. So the student goes back behind over here and looks and doesn't see anything. Comes back.
Where's the restroom?
I don't see anything. Where is the restroom? And then somebody goes out there and actually takes them and the restroom's a hole in the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, not even the floor, a hole in the ground.
Right.
That's the restroom. Well, the look on their faces is priceless.
I'm supposed to do what? Where?
No, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting to see that, that the both the shock that they have and the sense of, you know, homecoming that they experience.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. What is some of the reaction, I guess, upon arriving back home? What sort of transformation, metamorphosis, if you can just tell again a story or two of how one's perspective has changed or thoughts have changed and just how they've grown as a person, again, upon their return home?
Yes. In fact, you know, we have one girl who she spent some time, she spent 2 weeks during our four-month period program in Egypt last summer in a village. We stayed in Suhel Village, and we spent, you know, 2 weeks there using the language, doing everyday things, doing a community service project. So when this girl came back, she was so touched by the experience that she got back, and this is a 17-year-old girl. She lives in Brooklyn. She started a fund to collect money so that she could make contributions to women's programs on the island. She found that the outlets for the young ladies on the island were very limited. So you see that, you know, just having a sense of trying to give back, coming back, you know, all of our students are expected when they get back to do some kind of follow-up that benefits the community and people who are not so fortunate to be there. So
mm-hmm.
they do that by making presentations. They do that by writing articles for their newsletter. They do stuff that's on YouTube, PowerPoint presentations, slideshows, art exhibits, you know, any way that they can share what they've done with other people. You know, and the response is, like, overwhelming. A big part of how we recruit is because when students come back and they share their experience, other people want to go.
It touches the lives. I can see that. I can see that. Now, Mr. Moore, we live in a capitalistic society, capitalistic world, so I must ask, where does the financing for all this great work that you're doing, where does it come from?
You know, it's a grassroots program.
Okay.
People like you. Contribute. We have a benefit, which is coming up on May 19th at the National Black Theater in Harlem. Also celebrating Martin Luther King's, Malcolm X's birthday.
Mm-hmm. My son's birthday as well.
Barbara Ann Tier, Julius Coles, and Marta Moreno Vega. These are our honorees. So the parents in our organization, in addition to sponsoring benefits like this, they do other kinds of fundraising. We beg. We have an annual appeal. We've received some funding from the New York Community Trust for the last 8 years. In fact, they have a big program that they modeled on us. We don't get the kind of money that some of their recipients get, like the YMCA, because we're so small.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a grassroots project that somehow we've been doing it for 22 years, and it amazes me that we've been doing it because it's completely volunteer. So
mm-hmm.
we don't have a staff. You know, everybody who's involved in this does it because they believe in it. And, you know, the talent of our volunteers is just amazing in our parents. But, you know, it's really a labor of love. And if anybody out there wants to help us, we need all the help we can get.
How can they get in contact with you? If someone's out there ready with a checkbook in hand, ready to, you know, put a couple zeros on a check, how do they get it to you?
They can contact us at www.iyli.org. Stands for International Youth Leadership Institute. And they can contribute right on our website. We have PayPal. And they can make a contribution right there.
Mr. Webb,
www.iyli.org.
I must let you know that I'm so inspired by this conversation. I'm on the site now looking for the PayPal button. Contribute right there in the top right, and I will be contributing a few dollars here today. You know, that's my word.
Oh, Brother Brown, thank you so much. We appreciate
certainly,
it.
Certainly. I just hope a few others listening out there and listening audience will take my lead. Again, that's I as in igloo, Y as in yo-yo, L as in Libra, I as in igloo.org. Top right, there's a globe says contribute. That's where folks can go and make a contribution. Our time is running down. We've got about 6 minutes left. Tell us a little bit more, how many students participate each year in the program and get to make these trips.
Yes, we have between 10 and 20 students. It varies by year. And the program is 4 weeks in the country and a week of orientation here. And while the students are there, they take an intensive language course from a local university. We do as much as we can on university campuses because of our emphasis on higher education and for students to go to college. They use that when they go for 2 weeks in the village. They live in the village. They do a series of research projects, ethnographies, and community service while they're in the village. In addition, we have a curriculum, and the students do, they facilitate approximately 12 seminars during the summer. They read over 1,000 pages. They do, as I said, these research projects. So the idea is to give them a college-level experience, which many of them have never had while they're in high school, to build their skills up of thinking, teamwork, communication, problem-solving, planning, reading, organizing, you know, some experiences that they're going to need to be successful in the next phase of their life. As I said, the students who come to us, if they come to us and stay with us for 4 years, we see a dramatic increase in their academic record because they become much more focused. They realize the importance, and they can see a connection between school and their future, which many of our children just don't see offhand. They don't see that connection. But when you make it real, when you make it relevant, when you give them some real experiences, then they can make the connections for themselves, and many of them do. So that's the gist of the program. They come back. We keep a journal, by the way. And so reading some of the journal articles over the last 22 years is very interesting. You know, the kids are jokers. Then some of them really reflect on, you know, wow, I'm here because, you know, my parents, because my family, because of people who are leaders in my community. I'm standing on their shoulders. That's why I'm here. And just reading some of their reflections is just so beautiful. You know, these young people are truly inspirational.
That's beautiful. I didn't ask you a question that should have been at the top of the show. What made you get into this line of business, this life-changing work in the very first place?
Well, I tell you, I'm an Africanist, and I've spent a lot of time living and working in Africa. And one of the things that I've always noticed is that I was one of the few people of color in the position in any country I was visiting. Plenty of European Americans and plenty of Europeans and even Asians, but very few Latinos, very few African-Americans. So over dinner one night with a good friend of mine who worked for Operation Crossroads Africa, and he's also an Africanist, we were talking about this and why this was. And it's obvious to both of us that it's opportunity. You know, most of us don't have uncles who are the director of USAID or, you know, vice president of the World Bank or any one of these prestigious opportunities that give young white people the opportunities to do these kinds of programs and to live and work overseas. So we thought we need to develop in our community some alternative avenues that will enable kids who don't have any connection to any of those, you know, bigwig people, they have the same kind of experience, so they can begin to develop their portfolios as well, and they can begin to move in some of the avenues that previously have been pretty much closed to our community. Mm-hmm. So that was the genesis of the program. You know, we realize that we need to be academic. We want to connect to the African diaspora, really want to build bridges between people of African descent, whether they live in the Caribbean and speak Spanish or they speak Dutch or they speak French or they speak English, because all of us have a common bond and we've been divided too much. And so the program wanted to bring those people together, and that's why Africa is so important. You know, travel anywhere is great. And, you know, we encourage our kids to go study abroad when they're in college, but we focus on Africa for a reason, because Africa is still, to this day, is given the kind of image that is so negative. People are hungry. They got AIDS. You know, they're walking barefoot. They live in the jungle. You know, you'd be surprised how many people still feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a person of African descent, your identity is tied up with Africa. And when you think Africa is negative, part of you is negative too. So we want them to see the beauty of Africa and African people throughout the diaspora, as well as the universality of African people. The African people are the most universal people. The African culture is everywhere on this planet. You can't go anywhere, any continent on this planet where you don't see African culture on prominent display, whether it be through music, whether it be through art, through language, culture, food even. And so we wanted them to experience that. So we focus on Africa, even though we've been pressured on many occasions. Well, why don't you go to Japan? We'll give you $50,000 if you go to Japan. Well, you know, it's great to go to Japan. But if we have one trip every year, it's going to be to Africa or someplace in the African diaspora.
Brother Webb, I must say that I truly, truly do appreciate your spirit, truly appreciate your resolve, truly appreciate all that you were doing in shaping the lives of these young people. Again, the website, for those who may have just tuned in, is I as an igloo, Y-L-I. Let me say that one more time. I-Y-L-I stands for International, help me out, Mr. Webb.
Youth Leadership Institute.
International Youth Leadership Institute. When you go there, on the top right, there is a button that says contribute. You can contribute in denominations of 50, 100, 250, 500, 1,000, or other. I must admit my finances aren't where I would like them to be right now, so I clicked that other button, and I donated $25 a short time ago, so you should see that reflected in the account. Yeah. Hope
we appreciate that.
Certainly,
no amount is too small, and that's a great contribution, and plus, having me on this show, giving me a chance to talk about this, we're so grateful to you and the work that you're doing. Thank you so much for that.
I got a few fundraiser ideas, so I'll be sending you an email here shortly, and hopefully we can continue the dialogue and get some positive things going.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I'd like to have some of our kids on the show sometime.
So that would be wonderful. I'll talk with the show's producer, and we'll arrange that. Well, our
thank
half
you,
hour is up, Mr. Webb. I truly appreciate you, as I mentioned before, appreciate your contributions. And those in the listening audience, download this show, highlight this show, like it, send it to your friends so that we can continue the good work that the International Youth Leadership Institute is doing, taking kids from the ghettos, from the barrios, and showing them the world, shaping their lives, and making them better people. Again, we'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Webb, and we'll be coming back at you real shortly with another show. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Brown, and good night to all your audience.
All right. Bye now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.